Good evening and welcome to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. It must be 7 o'clock on Wednesday because we're here. And where is here? We're at where the heck are we? We're in Willoughby, Ohio. That's usually where we're at. And we're here for another program tonight. And as you know, you longtime listeners and first-time listeners, we're basically putting on a program from what is our business. Our business is coaching small companies from 1 to 25 employees, and that company is called Maximum Value Partners. I'm here with my long-term partner, business partner. We've been together 16 years, and we have a lot of fun doing this program in particular. Most of the stories are basically taken from the annals, not the anals, the annals of our coaching experiences. That's what we do in our day job during the week. What we do is condense them into a program, and we have a lot of fun on Mondays or on Wednesdays. And we also interview people, and we're going to do that tonight. Nana will introduce our two guests, two budding long-term entrepreneurs here that have a good story to tell. We have a lot of fun. We'll have a lot of fun with Jason and Matt. But here we are tonight. We're looking forward to a good program, and I'm going to turn it over to Adam.
All right. Thanks, Jack. Yeah, welcome, everybody, to Dirty Secret to Small Business. We're happy to have in the studio tonight. We've got two entrepreneurs who are going to be sharing their stories, and we've met them both with the client we've had that we're all involved with. That's how we had met, but we want to hear about their stories and their backgrounds, what they've done. So we've got Matt White. Hello, Matt.
Hello.
Hello, Matt. How are you?
And we've got Jason Henkel.
Hello,
Jason.
Hello, Jason.
Welcome, Jason.
Thank you.
So the best way for our audience to kind of get to know you first is just kind of give a little background of your stories, right? Just kind of tell us where you kind of came from a little bit, how you kind of got here. So a couple minutes on background is always a good thing. So, Matt, why don't you give us your story?
So I was born, don't go back that far.
Born a long
No, the long version.
On a hot summer night.
Yeah. So I have been in advertising since before I went to college, believe it or not. So of all the people you know that have gone through college, I'm not sure how many actually are still doing the thing that they thought they would be when they went to college.
Right.
I'm one of the few. Certainly the industry has changed, and what was advertising, which is my degree out of Kent State, is now more of a digital world and everything that goes on related to that. But I am still in the same boat relative to advertising marketing. It just has a whole different kind of view to it now. So graduated in 1995, so that's 24, 25 years, something like that. And I've done agency business. I've been self-employed many times, multiple businesses that have run, some successful, some not so much. And I've helped launch businesses. I've been a part of the marketing team on several larger companies. And today I still kind of do some of those things. I've always got my hands in more than one thing. Can't ever have just one thing going on at a time. So that's kind of my entrepreneurial piece that's come out. Also an author, which we can talk about at some point. I've written a couple books as well.
Yeah, a couple books. Just throw it in for
yeah. Yeah, a little loose change. Huh?
Right. All right. That's a good overview to start with. We'll get into some of the details of some of those ventures here. But Jason.
All right. Well, staying at a high level, and then we can dig into any details. But my entrepreneurship started around seventh grade. I started cutting hair for the baseball players, the football players. And it turned into a thriving little business. I definitely was ordering extra cheese on my pizzas and didn't think about the extra $2. It kind of grew unofficially so well that I got a formal cease and desist letter from the town barber.
That's progress.
In Shelby, Ohio.
That's real good progress.
Said, you are not paying taxes, and I will report you. So I made a dent in a real barber's business. Well, at any rate, that's where I kind of realized, hey, man, if you put, you work, grit, figure it out, and there's money to be made out there at a pretty early age. Then I was introduced by some friends to multi-level marketing in high school, and in 10th grade I did some of that, and watched all the big videos with the yachts, and I got all excited. Long story short, some of that passed, and went off to college, Ohio University. Unlike Matt, I did not necessarily stick with mine right away. I'm in international business and marketing, where my degree is in undergrad. Master's degree is general business, but got a job with Akzo Nobel out of Amsterdam. Did a really interesting corporate stretch for about probably 13 years. And I was mapping out business processes. Me and my team would parachute into countries that they operated in and map out how they did business and then talk with the managing teams of how they would do business differently in a future state. And then we would then implement that and deploy software to support those future state desires. While doing that, I was over Asia, and it allowed a lot of time during the day here in North America to get a little bit creative. So I started two-timing, putting a little bit of extra time in while I was waiting for the Asian teams to do their thing overnight. I'd finish my work in the day and still have several hours of working time here. So I started focusing on training companies on how to use Microsoft Outlook as it was designed to be used instead of just drowning in email. Turned that into quite a successful business that I still do as a passion from time to time.
Passion about Outlook.
Yeah, right. I have a passion against.
How does one get that? How does one get to that mental state?
Is there a pill for that?
There is a pill. There is a pill. I got it. But yeah, it is. Outlook is usually someone's enemy when in fact it is an amazing friend when someone shows you how to use it. I also in that time started a little brewery in Cleveland called Brick and Barrel. Learned a lot there. I was one of the three musketeers that kicked it off, exited that business. Sold my units in that about a year ago, and then started some land development as well down in the Virgin Islands where my brother lives. So just got a lot of little things in the kicker, and then ShotStop came along about coming up on 4 years ago, and that has been my full-time sweetheart since.
Very good.
I want to compete with him on his seventh grade story.
Okay.
So I actually started in fifth grade.
Oh, geez.
Okay. And I want to say that it was better than haircutting. So if you recall, most of us are old enough in the room. Back in the day when you got in trouble, you'd have to write reminders, right? I will not talk in class. I will not run in the hallway. Mm-hmm. I will not chew gum, whatever. So I started a little business where I would write reminders for people who got in trouble.
There you go.
Oh, wow.
And I made a little system where I could angle four pencils and tape them together. And I could make one line and have four lines
written
out.
A little lined paper, yeah, you would paper, fit the gap.
25 lines on a piece of paper. I'd do four times, so I'd write six lines instead of 25. I knew which guys and gals got in trouble all the time, and so I had a little, it was 25 cents a page. So if you needed 25 reminders, it was 25 cents. If you had 100 reminders, it was a buck.
Wow.
I had a whole filing system that kept the whole thing in place. That was in fifth grade.
That's pretty good. That's pretty impressive.
Now, did you ever use, what's the paper, the double stuff? I can't think of the black, it's a...
Carbon copy.
Carbon copy, thank you. Yeah. I remember doing it. We got trouble. We'd have like six sheets of thing. You got to press real hard.
Right.
Right. All the way through,
no,
right?
That would have been a good thought. And my dad was in the printing business.
Was it?
Yeah. So I should have just taken a couple of pieces of carbon paper, and that would have been even more efficient.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I got you beat.
You do.
Fifth grade.
You still running that? I might use that service.
Yeah. Unfortunately, nobody writes reminders anymore. I have to explain what a reminder is when I talk to anybody these days.
Right.
Yeah, nobody's getting in trouble anymore, right?
Or not. Absolutely.
Those kind of things.
So nobody does anything wrong. Right.
Go on a chalkboard. I remember going and doing a junior achievement thing years ago, and they had these smart boards. Right? And they try to write the smart board, and there's a couple-second delay.
Right.
Meanwhile, the walls are all covered with chalkboards. Like, got any chalk? Just give me some chalk. They're used now to almost like bulletin boards, or they're sticking stuff on the chalkboard. They aren't using chalkboards anymore. I like chalkboards, though. I know.
They were great in their time. They still are, but they aren't around anymore. So what are you going to do?
Well, we used to have to write. We have to write on the chalkboard sometimes. We use the ones they had the four or five.
Yeah,
lines.
Yeah. I remember those.
Yeah, so we'd use those to write when we got in trouble too.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's good. I like that. Very entrepreneurial. All
right. Right.
So. You mentioned, you're talking about hair cutting. I'm laughing because my brother cut my hair when we were very young.
Is that what happened?
Well, yeah, that's what happened. And I tell him every day, that's what it was, right? But the look on my mom's face as it's coming downstairs, she thought like my hair was just wet. Because he used like play scissors. He probably didn't use, you were probably a little better than that.
I was
like,
using trimmer. Though.
Trimmer, oh, okay.
Yeah, football players, but it's buzz cuts.
Right, that's it. That makes
had
it
to
easy.
Weave down.
So she was literally in tears about it. My brother was very proud of what he did. Just totally bad, butchered it. So he's not, he wasn't getting paid for it, by any means for sure. So, and multi-level marketing, that's something. I remember, I was working downtown for a stockbroker the one summer. Yeah. I was taking the rapid transit back and forth. You know? Yeah. For those of you who are not in Cleveland, it's like, you know, basically like a little subway. Anyway, this guy approached me on there to talk about stuff and invited me over to his house, took me into his basement, showed me all the wares, and all. I couldn't get out of there fast.
This was a stranger?
Oh, yeah, a stranger, you know? That invited you into his basement?
Okay. Okay, come on over there, young guy. Did you have hair then?
All right, enough of those kind of stories. Let's go back to our guest here.
Man, it was about to get good. There's a multi-level marketing.
Wait, for our listening audience here, if you want to be part of the program, 440-946-9468. You can call in, and Scotty will receive your call and patch it in here. By the way, there's four of us in this room tonight, and three of us don't have any hair. So we're telling all these hair stories.
Right,
so,
right.
Okay, let's roll on.
So you were saying about multi-level marketing has been around for a long time. It always seems great, and you see the yachts and everything else. But.
Right, and honestly, I was involved in two of them before high school was out. Okay. I did truly get the lesson of those. It is no different than any business. You put a lot of time in, and you'll probably get something out of it. They do kind of draw you in with the yacht in 3 minutes a day, and you're going to be a millionaire, and that's simply false. It's not the law of the universe. There's a movie out there called Believe. It's a parody done on it. It's actually genius. It gets into the sub-content of it. But I did earn money on that. So I learned that there was money to be made, but I learned it took real work, truly. But yeah. Then high school ended, and then I went into college and more traditional path after that.
So was it innate? You're both going back to fifth grade and seventh grade here. Do you think it's innate that you wanted to be an entrepreneur in terms of you discovered that I can take some skills and also make some money at doing it, and it just.
Yeah, for me, my dad owned a printing business, as I kind of referenced a minute ago. So when we first, I was raised in Dallas, and he moved to Dallas, worked for an advertising agency himself early on in the print production division, and then ultimately, I want to say about 1977 maybe, started his printing business. And so from the time that I was, four or whatever, I saw somebody running their own business. We worked for him in the summer times, and other times we'd, so there was always what we saw as the way that things went was you run your own business. Now, my brothers, neither one of them are entrepreneurial, so I don't know if it's
I may have scared him away from
it. Yeah. So, for me, certainly from an early standpoint, I saw, and I made a list, and I could go on forever about all the different things, both from the reminders in fifth grade to selling mistletoe to charging my parents for magic shows to, the whole deal. I had the 101 ways to make money, as a kid book, I was 10 years old or whatever. So innate for sure, at least for me anyway.
My background was different. My dad was a sales guy. So he did make his own money by time put in. And so he wasn't entrepreneurial, so to speak, as running his own business, his own show. But it was sales. And then both of my brothers ended up owning their own companies as well. So the three brothers ended up being entrepreneurial without an entrepreneurial dad, so to speak. So
yeah, not sure what happened. There's a lot of entrepreneurship parts to the sales piece, which is kind of doing your own thing. And it's risk-reward, but it's also, again, if you do well and you put the time and effort in, you can gain benefits. Yep. You know the benefit of having slave labor with the kids, right? That's usually part of the fun part.
A lot of benefits. We call that freelance.
Freelance. Free.
That's the right name.
Emphasis on the free. All right, we're up against our first break. When we come back, I want to dig into a couple of these stories in terms of some of the more interesting ones that kind of happened. Again, some of the goods and the bads we'll share as part of that. So stick around. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini.
And stay tuned. We got more Dirty Secrets of Small Business coming your way here on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online, wintradio.com. She moves. All right. Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini.
And we've been joined in the studio tonight by a couple of entrepreneurs who are starting to share their stories with us, Jason Henkel and Matt White. And we're going to get into some of these entrepreneurial stories. I asked each Matt and Jason to give some thought to the one that they maybe have learned the most from that they find pretty interesting. So Matt, why don't you start with what you found to be kind of your most interesting, or where you kind of learned the most in terms of which of those entrepreneurial ventures?
Yeah, so there was a ton. Like, you know, from fifth grade on all the way through high school, we did lawn mowing businesses and, you know, all kinds of stuff. But as I got into the web world, as it started coming in, and I was working for a company, kind of got screwed a little bit in that situation. But then, so I went off and decided to start my own business. And my very first client with that business was a guy named Charles Bentley, who is a Cleveland native. Mm-hmm. Went to high school here, went to Ohio State, played, went away for a little while, went to play for the Saints, and then came back to play for the Browns about 6 years later. Had a multi-million dollar, you know, huge, huge deal. Ended up getting staph infection. First day back, he busted his knee up and then was basically taken out of the game because of that, after that injury. And so this was, I think, 3 years after, it was probably about 2009, and he had stayed away from the game for a while because of what had happened, and so he was looking to do some business, had just started kind of putting together some training for basically high school offensive linemen who were trying to get scholarships to go to, you know, Division I schools. Okay. And so he had this idea of doing online training for offensive linemen. So you basically do classes. I did the video. I shot the video. I did the web work. I did all the stuff on the back end. He was the talent, or he'd get other players that would come in and do the actual physical showing of what it is that you're doing on the training side. And then we'd publish that out there. And then we would charge a monthly fee of $4.99 or $5.99 or something like that at the time, $5.99. This is in 2009. So if you can think about, it's 10 years ago. Seems natural right now, right? No brainer. You know, if I'm an offensive lineman and here's this professional player putting out this information, and it's great, and I get all access to it for $5 a month, you know, this is crazy.
Not bad.
Yeah. We went to a show down in Cincinnati. We had a little table, you know, a little 8x10 or whatever, little side thing. And then next to us was like four times the size of the booth that we had. It was the Cool Clinic, Coaches of Offensive Linemen, COOL.
Okay.
And they were selling CDs and books and all this stuff for hundreds of dollars. And we've got a giant guy who's standing next to me, a former NFL player who just knows his stuff and is all this. And you got all these old guys selling, you know, tapes and cassettes and CDs, all, you know, and they're just buying it up. We're sitting there trying to sell something that is practically free. I mean, when you look at it. And what we learned, a couple of things we learned out of that. One was, I think generally we were probably a little ahead of our time, just based on what we were doing. But then there was such a, within the industry, it's like, okay, well, if my players can get access to all this stuff online for just $5, why would they need me? What can I teach them? Or what if it's different than the style that I coach? And so we sat there, and literally, I don't know that we made a dime. We may have walked from that weekend with almost zero, if anything. And we did that business for a little while, and we kept going through. And what I learned out of it is, you know, why you kind of asked which one I learned most of, was one was keep sticking at it, even though it didn't work initially. And that first piece of feedback was like, this is just crazy. Why aren't these people buying this stuff? It's literally, you know, a fraction of the price, way higher quality, all this kind of thing. And what we realized was that we kept going, and even though they didn't buy it right away, even though they didn't do it right away, people started recognizing and watching and seeing what was going on. And while I was the behind the scenes and didn't quite get the benefit of it from a business perspective long term, what we found out over time was that Nike happened to be watching these videos that we're doing. Some other big time names were watching this stuff and seeing this guy named Charles Bentley, who had been this big star, who had fallen from grace kind of thing because of an injury, but was kind of on his way up, happened to be working with guys like Alex Boone, if you happen to know who Alex Boone is.
He was, right.
That's the same as Ed's guy, isn't it?
Bentley, isn't he an Ignatius guy?
He is, yeah.
Bentley is, yeah.
You know, Ed's Ignatius guys can work. I'm sorry. Ed's Ignatius guys work together sometimes, Jack.
Once in a while. Once in a great
sometimes
while.
It even works out well.
So Alex Boone played on the San Francisco 49ers team in the Super Bowl a couple years ago.
Two big linemen, both of them.
So LaCharles has taken that. He now has a fantastic business running out of Arizona. He's currently training college, professional, international women football players. You know, the whole deal. And he's built with my help, I believe, to start with.
Absolutely, those early yeah. days. Yeah. yeah.
So, and he even, you know, he knows it too. He knows, and we'll joke about the you know, the little times when we stood at that table and nobody would buy, nobody would pay $5. They'd rather pay $200 for a set of CDs.
Are you still talking with him?
Yeah, we're still connected. And yeah, I did his most recent website a couple years ago, upgraded from since then. But he's now in product development. He's really taking it.
Why'd he ask that question? Are you lining up haircut?
No, not in this room. I gotta find a haircut.
Right.
Well, it's interesting, you know, your point about kind of maybe being ahead of your time, and you look around now. Yeah, it's everybody has their smartphones or their devices where it's there versus. But the one thing you didn't mention maybe I want to talk about is behavior is so hard to change. Right.
Absolutely.
So people they're so used to kind of going to that, right? And there's a movie called The Mule. Have you seen The Mule or not?
Not yet. I've seen the previews.
So with Clint Eastwood, and anyway, he's a florist. He grows flowers, right? That's exactly what you see Clint Eastwood doing, right? But they open the movie up. It's like 15 years ago, and he's going to this little show, and he's like an award-winning guy in terms of, you know, whatever the flowers he grows, everything else. And there's a couple guys next to him that started a website doing all stuff, and he's like, who wants all that stuff? So people come to his table, they flood him, and they're buying all the stuff, and everything's kind of great. Next thing, they fast forward 15 years later, here he is getting foreclosed on his business, right? Because all of a sudden it's like, bam, like, who needs this internet thing? Okay, well, people, you know, right. You know, it takes a while, but once they start to kind of change, then it's okay, now they're there. So now it's the idea of going to buy, like, tapes and CDs, and again, don't you have it somewhere online I can go to? And, I want to get it now. I don't wait for it to come in the mail. Like, it's right. good, right? So early on the subscription model too, you know, in terms of that, you said, hey, we'll give you access for $6. And could you watch them all? You could probably watch them all and just pay $6, right? Versus, right.
But we're adding new ones. Yeah. We're adding new stuff all the time. Instead of having the CD that's you buy the 16 sets or whatever, or the 16 videos on that one thing, and then you're done.
Right.
But in our case, it was all, you know, constantly adding. And you're right. It was absolutely a time frame thing where it was like they just didn't get it. They didn't understand it. And it was an old guard, you know, the coaches, the offensive line coaches at the time, the audience that we were trying to go after. And our audience really wasn't the coaches. And I think that's what we recognized was that ultimately what we wanted was the kid who wants to get better at his craft.
Sure.
Not so much the coach that wants to coach the kids. They already have, you know, they're set in their ways and they're doing their thing. And so it was that, you know, how do we get to the kid? And we could. But the only way to get to the kid in that case at the time was through the coach.
Sure.
Because that's how they learn. That's how they do it. So it changed over time, and we did, you know, we were able
I wonder
to
if they were reselling a bunch of that stuff, the coaches with the kids product.
Oh, I can't imagine.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So they're probably making money. They couldn't figure out how to make money on your stuff, right? They can make, well, we'll buy the books in bulk for $5 a piece and sell them for $10 or whatever it might be, right? And
yeah, possibly.
Have it ready to go. I'm sure it was a nice little income producer for that.
That's,
That makes it even more difficult to change, change the behaviors, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, talking to the market's very important. It's something that people often don't think about, you know, in terms of we see a lot of folks are out, they're doing stuff, but they aren't necessarily thinking about who they're trying to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very firmly in mind who you want to be talking to, right? And, trade shows can be very eye-opening, too. You know, we had a fundraising company we're involved with the software. I think you may have told the story last time or a couple weeks ago, but it's online software basically just takes what, instead of having Susie go door to door and raise money for stuff, you can set up a little web page and email out, and people can do it that way. The original thinking was to sell it. You know, we'll sell a license for, you know, $20,000-$30,000, right? And they go to the show, and the guys are like, "What are you guys, freaking crazy? Like, who's gonna pay
that?"
That's
exactly
for, right?
What they said too. Yeah. You know, we were so far off; it was unbelievable. But you're talking about not making any money at your show, but you gain so much insight.
Absolutely.
You know, and you go back, to the drawing board and redo it. You know, and it was the same with us. We learned a ton of stuff. We didn't get left out of the place, but close to it. But we came back, and that was like 10, 12 years ago. And the company's going very nicely now.
And tweak the model from that big upfront thing to where it became a partnership, where it's okay. Well, you know, it's a little bit to set it up. But then again, if you sell, we'll take a percentage of whatever you guys sell. If you don't sell anything, We don't make any money. You don't make any money. Mm-hmm. You guys do better. We do better.
And that's an interesting, one of my biggest lessons learned in that was when we went in originally, it was pretty much, I was a bit starstruck, right?
Sure.
Charles Bentley, big deal. And so I was like, hey, and he's basically, in my mind at the time, he's bringing me along as opposed to, hey, I have a whole lot to offer. And again, we're talking, a long time ago. So what I realized and have done since then is create better partnerships, better arrangements financially and otherwise to say, hey, this is, let's do this so we both benefit if something big happens, not just I'm just doing the back stuff.
Yeah, that's good. All right. We're up against our second break here. Jason, we'll get Jason in here for his story. Give him some time to kind of think about it. He's taking some more notes. So we'll hear one of Jason's stories when we come back. So stick around. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini.
And stay tuned. We got more Dirty Secrets of Small Business coming your way here on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online, WINTradio.com. All right. Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini. Hey, our new guy. I went to Ohio U as well.
Yeah?
Yeah. Right. Okay, go Bobcats.
We got Bobcats everywhere, huh?
That's right, everywhere.
They're all over the place. All these Mac schools. Sorry, I got a Big Ten school. It's all right. We're all good. All right, so welcome back. We got in studio tonight, we got Matt White and Jason Henkel. They've been sharing some of their entrepreneurial stories. Matt shared very interesting one about some videos that he did, and it was way ahead of the curve in the last segment. We're going to bring Jason in now to talk about one of his most interesting stories in terms of where you learned a lot from, and I have a sense of what you're talking about. I'll let you start with it.
You bet. No, there was one that was really particularly interesting that I learned a lot, and it was when I was a male gigolo in Italy.
That's the good one.
We're going to
Dirty
Secrets.
That story.
That's the Dirty Secrets.
Dirty Secrets. We got to stay true to the show.
I thought it was Spain.
Dirty Secret alert.
No, it was
a lot of diversity in
there. They kicked
program.
Me out of Spain and settled in Italy. No, on a serious note, I'm going to kind of break it down into two. By a significant margin, the most learning I've done has been with Shot Stop Ballistics. We were 4 years in the running here, and coming up on 4 years anyways, and we really did literally start in the days in the garage. It was in the founder's duplex home office. Now, we've since moved into a nice location and, kind of putting our big boy pants on and growing up, and sales are coming in now, and we are, getting new contracts and agency orders by the week now. But those early years, I remember Elon Musk's statement just burnt indelibly in my mind that early phase startup is like staring over the abyss while chewing glass. And some days really are like that. The amount of ups and downs, the unknowns. I remember when the first larger orders came in, the excitement, and then the oh shit moment of, well, are we going to deliver that on time? And so just watching all that happen, watching the team evolve to what it's going to be and what it is now, and so much devil in the detail. Some of my biggest learnings have been, be careful who you're listening to, including yourself. Be careful not to listen to yourself too closely.
All those voices, okay.
These are some long nights.
How many voices do you have in your head, Jason?
Yeah, exactly. But it sure has built calluses that I needed. I'm a natural-born people pleaser. It worked in corporate world quite well. I climbed fast. But anything outside of being very authentic doesn't work too well for yourself or for others around you in the entrepreneurial world.
No, you're very right. It's who you are, and you got to be who you are. That often is not often. It's always the best way. It's always the best trail.
Agreed. And I needed that. Some people learn things the easy way and the hard way. Mine was a little bit more the hard way. Just
however you learn, that's the key. That's right.
But here I am. So that was, we could go into a thousand stories and details over the last 4 years around that. But I'll split the time with the other thing I mentioned, the outlook productivity that I've been doing for roughly 10 years for companies, done for companies ranging from Pfizer to Wells Fargo to even train the trainers of Dale Carnegie, and American Greetings and several others. But it's so it's meaningful because it takes care of, I believe, a real problem in the society, and that is incoming is too fast and furious, and people feel off balance. could almost spin a bottle in any room, and it's going to land on a person who's feeling like the incoming's a bit more than they can handle. What I train on is how to utilize a tool, which is, in this case, it's Microsoft Outlook, to help you get back out in front of it and feel calm and deliberate and authentic in your daily delivery. Go home with zero emails in your inbox. Feel like you accomplished
zero
something.
Emails.
Wow.
What's that?
That's my pitch.
I can't imagine that. Can't come close to it.
No, and most couldn't. And I couldn't either. I had 1,000 folders. I'd go home with hundreds in my inbox every night. I had people reporting in to me from several countries, and it was horrible. It was a horrible feeling. And they say that if you have a great business finding is find your pain in the ass, solve it, and then teach others how you did it. So that's what I did. I trained my team there at Akzo Nobel, and it was so effective that Akzo Nobel actually sponsored me to fly around and train other managing groups on how to use Outlook, a tool they had already paid for. So I wasn't asking them to go buy fancy software or anything. It was just, do you have Outlook? Have you ever been trained on it? And do you go home with more than one email in your inbox every night? That's my pitch.
What a great gig.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. It's a simple canned thing. It's a two-hour program, and people walk away changed. So
you use the word incoming. I think we often refer to those interruptions, don't we, Jack?
Very much so. Yes, especially those long ones.
You're right.
I've seen a couple of those.
No, but you're right. It's things are here, and it can be overwhelming with all the ways that people can communicate these days. Right. And
absolutely.
Email can often be abused. There are so many people that are abusers of the emails in terms of what's kind of going on. Right. We're going to have a discussion back and forth, this or that, or I got to get caught up. And I think it's probably most people's biggest fear if they go on vacation. Even if they are on top of something, now if I go on vacation, holy, I got to come back to 1,000 emails, right?
Yeah.
So I think most of us won't go away. We'll sneak away and check stuff and clear things out to make sure, because, you know, if you've been there, you don't want to be there. So you want to kind of keep on top, try to keep on top of it, keep somewhat on top of those things.
Yep.
So, yeah, if you're able to deliver that, that's a fantastic tool. And getting the message down, to your point, keeping it simple. Going back to some of the marketing stuff, you get a very simple message. Hey, do you have zero, emails in your inbox or no at night? If no, we need to talk, right?
Might be interested.
If yes, maybe we'll bring you on and see what you're doing. If you're doing some...
Yeah, really, learn from it.
Well, yeah, I go, I highlight everything. I just delete. What's the big deal? I just delete everything.
That's how you get to zero.
That's how you get to zero.
Yeah.
And if it's really important, Jason, they're going to email me again, right?
Yeah.
Hey, you didn't respond to this.
It's amazing how many people actually take that approach.
Yeah.
Yes.
You must have missed this one.
I started it. I know I did.
So I'm going to send it again. Yeah, we got to the point, you know, between Jack and I, I'm usually the more responsible when it comes to technology. And Jack will only respond if he has something to add or to put in. He goes, so many people are like, well, I'm going to stop copying Jack because he's not, you know, reading emails. I said, well, no, he's reading them. He just, again, he's not responding. If you need something, a direct response, he'll respond. Or if I get to it first and you have nothing to add, he's not going to do it.
Yeah.
So make sure you copy him, because he's paying attention, right?
Got it.
Doing it. If he doesn't want to, if he wants to be taken off, he'll let you know. Don't worry. He's not bashful that way, right? Let him know how you're feeling about stuff. So that's good. So I guess part of the sales skills you got from your dad.
Yeah.
Come through as part of that, right?
Absolutely. The sales bit that I think my dad for was he genuinely cared about people. I mean, there was just no question about it that when he was talking to a customer, he kind of wasn't on his company's side. He was going to make sure that customer was very happy. And I watched him walk away from a company with three young kids, and he didn't know what he was going to do. He ended up landing another sales role relatively quickly, still in carton packaged goods. But I watched him do what was right once, and for the customer. There was a very particular situation with one of his key customers who was kind of his bread and butter for years, and the boss made a particular decision that he said, I have to walk if you do this. And he did. Mm. And he, by the way, he shared it with the kids, which was interesting, because I guess there are two schools of thought out there.
How old are the kids at this point?
My youngest brother, I'm going to say probably 7, 12, and 14-ish.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So do you tell the kids reality and let them learn with you? He took that route, and I'm glad he did, because I definitely picked up on that. I remember those moments vividly, him coming home.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. I mean, that's a life-altering episode, no question.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have those moments. Now you're in that mode. I got a 16-year-old, 13-year-old right now, and you guys both have. You guys have young kids too, and you try to remember what it was like to be that age, right? And what you can take in, what do you see, what are you hearing, right? And so, and as he's talking to a 14 versus 12 versus 7-year-old, they all heard the same thing, but they all heard very different things, probably too, right? Well, what's going on? What's this mean for me? Okay, all of a sudden, mind going everywhere, and it's okay. Well, but here's why. And you get these points in life, and you know. Sometimes you do well, sometimes you don't do well. But it's okay. What do you stand for?
That's right.
And so.
So we openly talked about the meaning of these events.
Okay.
And the kids get so wild with the meaning, sometimes you look at them wrong, and that's a meaning that sticks with them for the rest of their life just from a passing glance.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it was nice to have open dialogue like that and get something out of it that I took with me.
Right. Yeah, those life lessons are all over the place to be able to kind of learn. It's there's people you see in business that. Riding the fine lines at times, and the question, there's a lot of gray. It's rare that things are black and white. There's always a lot of gray. So the question is, how dark of a gray are you comfortable with, or do you like, or what do you see? And your gut gets more educated as the years go by too. You've been in more situations and seeing stuff. And so you're right. It's a very good lesson. I mean, instead of assuming that whether it be our kids or other people involved with us, they're going to get that lesson.
Yeah.
Sit down and talk about it, and you point it out.
Yeah.
Very, very important stuff.
Can I add something in there, too?
Absolutely.
As I said, my dad ran the printing shop for as long as I can remember growing up, but the things that I remember was the family aspect of what he did. He was always gone in the morning before I woke up, but he was always home either for dinner or for soccer practice or gymnastics, which is what I did growing up. So it was, again, learning the priorities of what, yes, business is important and it makes money and that's what you got to do, but there are things that are a priority. And to me, that's what, anytime somebody says, who had the biggest influence on your life kind of thing, it certainly is that my dad, is that aspect of saying he could be an amazing businessman, but also an amazing dad and husband. And I think that balance is really important too, associated with any business.
It doesn't hit you at the time because you're so young and
right.
occupied with self-centeredness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But after, especially once you get your own kids, it hits home. Like, hey.
Because I knew everything then.
Every time he missed, if he did miss, and occasionally you miss,
sure.
you're looking up in the stands, looking for him, and you don't realize that, how important that is.
True.
That's a big-time connection.
Yeah, for sure.
I had a lot of the same things with my dad growing up. He started his company, and he'd be there for all that stuff, but unbeknownst to me, he'd be up till whatever, till 2 o'clock in the morning, finishing something he promised somebody to be done the next day. He just figured he'd, can work his calendar to make those things kind of happen, And remember when people talk about this whole work-life balance thing, and it's like, well, I don't know. It's not like it's 8 hours of work, 8 hours of play, 8 hours of sleep. It's like it just all kind of all kind of melds together. What do you want to get done during the day? I got some business to do. I got some family things. Okay. Start, you figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
So if that means I need to step out at 2 o'clock to do this, that's what you do. But I'm going to, do what I need to do later tonight.
I found out later in life, years later, that my dad actually had a night shift at UPS during some of the slower times of the print shop. So he was doing, we had no idea that he was working from, 11 to 5 or whatever.
Right. You guys were better.
Yeah.
Right.
And so again, the dedication and yet us not knowing what was going on.
It's amazing.
So here, you get those stories, you hear about them. It's okay. So, and those have a big impact on you, a big impact. You touched on something. We can go to this in our next segment. You mentioned gymnastics that you did when you were younger. I remember you told the story the first time. It's a little more than just what you did when you were younger.
All the way through.
Yeah. So you went to college and okay. Right. So, but it's one of the things that we see. We have a lot of clients that are former athletes, and things you learn in sports in terms of what kind of goes on, I think sets that foundation pretty well. And from a business standpoint, can have tremendous success in terms of being part of a team, having sacrifices, a lot of good things that you learn about coming through. How do you deal with failure? Things that are kind of going, all those kind of very, very good things are important. So we got one more segment, so stay tuned. We'll be back here on Dirty Secrets with Jason and Matt. I'm Adam Sunhalter.
And Jason and Matt, why don't you, for this last segment, tell us what the most important thing is that you think contributes to the success of an entrepreneur. I'm Jack Mancini, and I look forward to your answers.
All right, stick around. We got more Dirty Secrets of Small Business coming your way here on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online, wintradio.com. I just handed my pitchfork. right, welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini.
And Jack, we went to break. You had a question for our guests, now Jason and Matt.
What is the biggest, only one, what is the biggest contribution that you can make to be a successful entrepreneur?
Me first?
Oh. You go ahead.
Well, you wrote a book on this subject. So.
Well, I guess I'll
go ahead. You go right ahead.
So, yeah, so I did. I happened to write a book called Stop Selling, Start Helping, which can be found at stopsellingstarthelping.com. And the main concept is just what it says. If you can go through, and I heard a story kind of associated with it, but basically if you go into a sales scenario where you're trying to do business with someone and you look at it as though you have the cure for your client's cancer, your prospect's cancer, you look at it as though, you know, you're not going to stop until until they either take what you are giving to them because you know you can help them. I have your cure. Right. If they don't want it, then I move right on to the next person. It's not because they don't like me. It's not because, you know, all the other reasons that we tell ourselves of why we failed or why we're not doing it or whatever, or we're charging too much or all that kind of stuff. It is whatever I can do to help. And then ultimately, if you need and can use my product or my service or whatever it is that I'm selling, if I help you down the road or I help somebody that you know or I help somebody that I know who told you, ultimately that decision gets made and they realize that you help them and they'll either buy from you or they'll tell somebody about you. And the difference in, if you read, for example, one blog versus another blog, and one blog is, you know, talking about all the great pieces of our product and how wonderful it is and how much problems it solves and the time that it saves you and all, you know, all this kind of stuff, but it's all about the product or all about you, the company or whatever. And then you read a blog post that talks about educating you and telling you about all these resources in order to solve your problems and to take that time away and all, you know, and there's never a sell other than, oh, by the way, we do this thing or we have something that could help. The benefits and the success of both of those blogs, which again, I say blogs, but that can tie into a sales conversation or, you know, anything. And this is not just professional. I would also say the same thing applies to your personal life is if I'm more focused on helping you, whether I get a sale or not, ultimately, everybody wins because I'm not trying to force something on you. I'm not trying to, you know, I don't feel bad if you don't want my stuff. You don't feel bad because I pressured you into something. So if you can really get that, and it takes a change of mentality. It's not an easy, it sounds really fun, you know, stop selling, start helping, right? But it is so difficult for people to understand and comprehend and implement. They can hear it, but then the second you say, stop selling, they're like, wait a second. How am I going to make any money?
So how do I get paid? It works. Okay, well, having that mentality is very important. So stop selling.
And that would be, again, back to the Charles story that I told earlier. That's what we were doing.
Sure.
We were educating. We were helping people do it. We were giving them the tools to be able to get better at what they did. And ultimately, they watched and they followed. And, again, there was success that was had out of it.
Sounds like a laid-back personality or you know, responsibility mentality. That's what it's all about. Being cool, calm, collected, having them feel comfortable is like very important, very imminent. I know you were talking about Bentley. That Bentley story you said was fantastic. You felt like you were the lesser, but at first, but then it grew into something. You realized you guys were both on the exact same playing field. You're both just human. You're both, you know, so organic in so many ways. You both don't know everything. You're always learning. You're consistently learning.
Right.
That's what it's all about. It's
and
cool.
I used to go into a sales presentation opportunity and my goal was I got to get the sale, and if I walk out of here without the sale, either I failed or, you know, whatever it is. But when you walk into that with my goal is to see how, you know, how I might be able to help this person, maybe I get a sale, that's great. Maybe I help this person, that's great. Maybe I get a connection out of it, that's great. You know, there's a lot of positives, not just the sale.
Right. Yeah,
it's very good. That is, that's I got to read that book. I got a copy of it.
You got a copy of it.
I will.
There.
Yeah, no reason not to.
Stop selling and start helping.com.
No and.
No.
Stop selling, start helping.
I'm sorry. Stop.
Yeah.
Okay. No slashes, no nothing. That's okay.
Just one long stop selling, start helping.com.
All right.
You guys remember old Zig Ziglar?
Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah.
With his overhead projector.
Yeah, we saw him. Right? We saw him at what used to be the Q. Now it's whatever. Rocky Field Mortgage. Like, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And they had all these speakers. And here he gets on the middle of the stage in the middle of the queue and 20,000 people. He has his overhead projector and his things. It comes out, does a kneeling, all the stuff. Yeah.
It's a little Mylar plastic thing bent at the corners. Yeah.
That's outstanding.
He had a thousand lines that'll stick out at any given moment. But I remember the one where he's along your title there. If you just help enough people get what they want, you'll have everything you want in life. He would repeat that over and over, and that would burn on me. So that's just no doubt, man. You got to help.
Good. All right. So that's Matt's answer. What do you think, Jason, in terms of what's the number one thing, right?
Yeah, I mean,
the biggest thing. The biggest thing, they were both put on the spot.
Yeah.
So
I tried to think of something that would just be epic and knock the audience off their chairs. No, for mine, I think in entrepreneurial world, the go-to I'm going to say is consistently choose either one of two paths. You're going to influence the environment today, or you're going to be influenced by the environment today. And I'm going to be the influencer. Because the ups and downs, and especially in those early days, when we were telling people at ShotStop, hey, we've invented plastic that stops bullets, rifles, like not small bullets. You know, and we're going to take it to market in law enforcement, military. The amount of resistance, if I didn't choose to be the influencer, there's just no chance. I would have walked out of that. I had a lot of people, close people, saying you're nuts, that it's all just theory and get out. And then it came to fruition, and now we have real body armor that's made out of plastic, and it's working. So I never forget choice.
Well, that's persistence. That's really what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And you just you find ways to move it forward, and you combine with what Matt's talking about with helping people, then I mean, it's a winner, you know. It just, how can you lose with something like that?
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, the consistency of constantly choosing, even though you're pretty tired some of those days and you don't feel like being the optimistic one, influencing the room to higher vibration, let's just say. I wrote this line to the Viktor Frankl in his Man's Search for Meaning book, if you guys have read that.
Yep.
He says, choice can never be lost or stolen. It can only be forgotten. And that came from a guy who saw some pretty nasty stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, I kind of go back to him, and I think on, well, yeah, things are pretty tough. But he didn't forget choice in his situation. I'm not going to either. It's been quite inspiration.
Well, it's one of those things we talked to a lot of owners. And, you know, when I was here, you mentioned, like, choice, and it's an attitude. And you know, you can choose every day. And we meet so many entrepreneurs and business owners who are not having fun. They're right. Down in the dumps. They're, you know, they're the Debbie Down or the negative Ned, whatever word you might use. We feel like we just want to shake them and say, look, if you're this miserable, go get a job somewhere, right?
Yeah,
because the only person can change it is you.
Right.
I said, and the rest of the team takes your lead. So if you're down in the dumps, you're negative, you're like, woe is me, that's how we should be. That's how we're going to be. But you have that choice. You get up every day. You know, people are going to throw stuff at you. Okay, so you have a choice how you respond to that. So how are you going to respond to it? So don't lose sight of that choice and have that attitude, because again, we're all very blessed to have the opportunities that we have. You know, the ability. You know, again, by no means is our country perfect. I'm not saying that, but
mm-hmm.
We have a lot of great opportunities and chances to do this stuff. So we're all very privileged to be able to have our own things and kind of mm-hmm. be doing that, and not have to worry about Big Brother. Well, I guess Big Brother is kind of watching a little bit.
Yeah, he's still around.
That's right.
Or she, whoever.
But yeah, we have that choice. You know, we have that choice to be able to do it. It's very, very blessed. And you mentioned guys like Viktor Frankl or Zig Ziglar. Those are folks that didn't just talk about it;
mm-hmm.
they lived it.
Yeah.
You know, you go through some things, and it's trying to help. The idea, if we come back to the helping thing for a second. People can smell it; they can sense it, right? If I'm being sold something, I can feel I'm being sold something,
mm-hmm.
versus I'm not, and mm-hmm. so. You got to internalize that. And that's, I think you said, it's got to be in the personal life, too. I think it's something you have to kind of just think about that. How am I going to help somebody else? Right? And
my spouse, my kid, my neighbor. I mean, the whole thing, it does come in. And like I said, it's a foundational level change of mentality, because we're always selling. we're, you know, there's always a reason, right? Even when I'm talking to my wife, it's all, you know, there's, we're playing the game, right? It's this whole thing. It happens in business. It happens in personal friendship relationships and all that kind of stuff. And so if your point is always, and it's not about win-win, because win-win means I also have to win. That's another, you know, part of the story. And it's, this whole concept is, it flips sales on its head. I mean, it's a, like I said, it's a challenging concept to take. It really is foundational, and it's not an easy one to take. But the what I've seen over the years that I've put this in place for my clients and people that I've worked for, it's night and day. I mean, it makes such a difference when people are like, "You're not supposed to tell me that I'm not. I may not be a client.
Right.
You know, you're not supposed to tell me that. You know, me tell you that you're not a client a fit for me as opposed. You know,
yeah, I've had people drop out of doing that. Right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah."
That is a glorious moment, the first time you fire a client.
Right.
Absolutely. It's just you're finally starting to grow up a little bit and know that I'm here to help people.
Right. If you don't want to take it, yeah, if you don't want to take it, I can, it's not my bad. Well, let me go find somebody who wants my help.
You guys are doing some good quotes. There's a podcast and a guy I listen to a lot. His name is Father Larry Richards. He talks about a life of joy in that way. It's Jesus, others, than yourself. Mm-hmm. But the key, it's yourself last. Yeah. Everybody else first, and if you think about that, and you're thinking about that, it works really, really well, and you'll be able to buy into it. All right, well, as always, Jack, one of the fastest hours in radio,
absolutely,
and the podcast. Jason, Matt, thank you very much for sharing
your
stories that are nice.
Yeah, we're great to be here.
Jason, Matt, definitely, we're glad to have you tonight.
Thank you.
All right, thank you for listening to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. We're here every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern. If you want to get a hold of us in between, you can email us at radio@MaximumVP.com. Hey, if you missed any of today's show or our prior shows, you can get them all at DirtySecretsOfSmallBusiness.com. They're all listed there. You can do that. And you can also go to your favorite podcast player, whether it be iTunes or Google Play, Stitcher, whatever device you're using, to be able to subscribe to it. If you do, if you leave a review, that'd be fantastic. We'd appreciate that, so you can share it with other folks as well. So learn more Dirty Secrets of Small Business next Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Hey, thanks for listening on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online, WINTradio.com.